Porkabeller.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the sergeant at arms be instructed bring in the absent members.
Okay, on the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Sister Catherine Steffens from the College of St. Catherine's, Catherine, and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
A blessing prayer for those of you in the Senate. Strong and loving God, bless these leaders in the Senate with grace and wisdom. May they act kindly and with conviction and be hospitable to criticism. May they continue to act out of service, letting aides, constituents, and those who depend on them know that they are seen and appreciated. Sustain in them, O God, their developed gifts of deep listening and wholesome words, understanding and patience. Bless these leaders with good friends who can be mirrors of blind spots and also treasured supporters of creative thinking. May this day be a blessing to them as they are a blessing to all of us in Minnesota. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, sister. Very good. Thanks for coming. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Phoebe, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebretson, Johnson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Coring, Kubley, Langseth, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Parisot, Pogemiller, Pretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vandeveer, Vickerman, and Wieger.
Quorum is present. First order of business is messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted, House File Number 392, signed Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Next order of business is first reading of House bills. It will be referred to the committee as indicated, first reading of House bills. Next order of business is reports of committees.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Next order of business is motions and resolutions. There's one motion to be read at the desk. Read it, okay, please. Yep.
Senator Kubley moved that his name be stricken as chief author in the name of Senator Kielash, shown as chief author, to Senate file number 840.
Without objection, we'll take these motions as one motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. There are a couple of resolutions printed on today's agenda. Without objection, that's resolutions will be sent to the Rules Committee. Next order of business is general orders. Senator
President.
Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move the Senate do now resolve itself into Committee of the Whole for the purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Senator Mr. President, Pogemiller. I'd like to designate number 12, Senate file number 166. As a bill to take up. I think it's probably the only one we'll take up today. Okay. I would yield to Senator Scheid.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate file number 166 be recommended to pass.
Senator Shide, discussion on the bill.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members, Senate File 166 is a bill that reinforces our common law requirement that a person who initiates a life insurance policy have an insurable interest in the life of the insured. Hence, this bill is called the Insurable Interest Act. That means that the person has an interest in the continued life of the person who's getting who holds the insurance policy. You know, in this day of fancy financial instruments,
this is a pretty important bill. Let's listen or take your talks to the back room. Senator Shide.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In this day of fancy financial instruments like derivatives and credit default swaps, we're now seeing what may be the most perverse scheme of all, wagering on human life. Stranger-originated life insurance, or STOLI, which you all by now heard, is the distortion of the old viatical settlements that were made to AIDS patients back in the mid-'80s who were used the proceeds, who cashed out their life insurance policies because they knew that they were terminally ill. The life settlement business has kind of spun out of that. This bill goes after a situation that develops like this. A senior citizen, 65, 70 years old, is sought out to apply for a large life insurance policy, maybe $1 million or more, although now I understand they're even doing some of these for as low as $50,000. But let's take $1 million or more. And, of course, you know that your insurability has to do with your net worth, so probably most of us in here couldn't walk in and get a $5 million or $10 million life insurance policy because we probably don't have the net worth to justify that. But let's say it's $1 million. The senior authorizes a life expectancy evaluation. And that's a review by a specialty firm that computes how long that senior citizen is going to live. If the senior will live, say, 3 to 5 years, then they'd be a good bet for a life settlement agreement. The senior agrees to apply for the policy knowing that they're going to receive a cash settlement after the 2-year contestability period. Now, that 2-year contestability period is standard across the United States. Additionally, they may very well not have to pay anything, maybe not pay any premiums, because those premiums can be financed by the buyers of the policy. And depending on their life expectancy, a person could get maybe 20 to 40% of the face value of that life insurance policy, of that death benefit. And the life insurance company does not know that this is the plan. In response to what they've seen, life insurance companies have, in the last year or so, begun to raise rates for senior citizens because more and more this is happening. And we all should care about that. Ripping off the life insurance company does damage, members, to all of us who want to go on having life insurance to protect our families or perhaps our business partner. In our discussion of mortgage foreclosures and predatory lending in the last few years, we learned that our mortgages had been bundled with other mortgages and sold as a package to investors looking to make money on what has always been a solid investment, home mortgages. These mortgages were securitized. Some investors were looking for more risk, and so subprime loans grew, and those promised big returns to investors. As you know, those interest rates would notch up periodically until the people would be paying, you know, incredible interest rates on their mortgage payment, and we know what happened. Today, life settlement agreements are also being bundled and securitized. And they are sold in what Wall Street calls death bonds to investors. And what could be a more sure bet than betting people are going to die? Well, one thing could go wrong. People could live too long, causing premiums to continue to have to be paid on that policy. Being paid, remember, by the investor who now is the beneficiary of your life insurance policy. And that would reduce their profit at the end. That happened to one of a company that's actually located in Minneapolis. And their business involves creating life expectancy tables and deciding how long people will live. They had to apologize and change their business, change those tables, because they found out that people were living longer than they originally thought. And they had to apologize for that and take longer life expectancies into consideration going forward. So as the life settlement market has grown enormously in the last few years, regulators and state legislatures, even Congress, have started to raise concerns. Concerns that the traditional purpose of life insurance, providing for a person's loved ones, or in some cases a business partner, that's being threatened. You know that life insurance proceeds are not taxable. Life settlement agreements are taxable to the insured. Some investors may actually, probably are, avoiding taxation if they receive policy proceeds through a trust in the name of the insured. Some of the financing agreements or arrangements eat up a lot of the settlement agreement people had. A person who enters into a life settlement agreement may actually use up their insurability, and they may not be able to purchase life insurance for the benefit of their family in the future because they already have this insurance policy as the insured, even though their family is not going to benefit. Underscoring all of these concerns, I think, is the moral hazard of someone who stands to benefit from your death sooner rather than later.
All right, let's, please, everybody seems to be talking this morning, so let's listen to Senator Scheidt. Senator Scheidt.
And Mr. Chairman, and I don't want to belabor this. I just want to have people understand as much as they can. Having said all this, I want to make it clear that there is still a place for legitimate life settlement agreements. And you have at your place a letter from Mr. Wischmeyer, I think it's David Wischmeyer, who talks about doing life settlement arrangements or agreements with his clients, and his firm does those routinely. They're legitimate. The difference is that when the person took out the life insurance policy, someone had an insurable interest. They wanted them to continue to live. So you've got that letter. And he testified that the secondary market significantly increased what the insured consumer receives if they need to surrender their policy. So that's a good thing. The specifics of the bill, I want to just draw your attention to Section 5, which is on page 7. That's the essence of the bill. It creates a rebuttable presumption that there is a STOLI, there's a stranger-originated life insurance, if and only if the insured underwent a life expectancy evaluation within 18 months of issuance of that policy, and the results were evaluated for determining how much that policy would be worth on the secondary market. So they did that up front before there's any policy. Okay? And there was an agreement or an understanding with an investor or with their advisor that, and this is before the policy is issued, that another person would purchase that policy, or the policy owner, the insured, did not fund the premiums themselves, or with some kind of, where they had some skin in the game, if you will. The financing was being done by a third party, by the investors. I have seen something that was handed out to members. I don't know if it's on your desks or not. It's goldenrod colored. And it says that we won't let seniors sell their policy for 5 years. That just isn't so. If one of those things occurred, if there's a life expectancy evaluation, which frankly is done really only for these STOLEs, and somebody didn't finance it themselves or they had an agreement, then there's a presumption. But if you have a life insurance policy that you intended all along would go to the benefit of your family or your business partner as key man, then you are free to sell that policy and enter into a life settlement agreement. I want to say that I think this bill will dramatically decrease STOLE policies because the secondary market is not going to risk the consequence of there having been STOLE. Legitimate life settlements will not be affected. Actually, I think they may improve. They may improve settlements to the senior because the risk of STOLE is greatly reduced if it's not eliminated altogether. I'll do my best to answer questions, and I would appreciate your support on this important bill.
Further discussion on Senate File 166. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. And if Senator Scheid would yield, I hope that you would address Senator Scheid what some folks would consider to be a property interest, and I know you take issue with that particular phrase. But we sure have a lot of Minnesotans, Mr. President, who have life insurance policies now or might have life insurance policies in the future, and they may want the freedom to sell that life insurance policy in the open market. We had testimony in the committee about that from one gentleman who was very compelling. He said that he lost his investments in his business, he lost his investments in the stock market, and had to rely on his life insurance policy and the proceeds of that for his regular living. So I hope that Senator Scheid would address that concern for the body and for Minnesotans.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ortman, my closing remarks had to do with legitimate life settlements. And I don't believe that if somebody has a life insurance policy that they've had for a few years, maybe only 2 years, and there was no stranger, there was insurable interest, there is no problem. If there was not insurable interest at the inception of the policy, then that is the stranger-originated life insurance. That's where you have the agreement. Well, first you have the life expectancy evaluation, and then you have the agreement or the financing that's provided. So other people with legitimate life insurance policies are able to make those life settlement agreements and get the cash that they may need at a certain time in their life.
Further discussion, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would Senator Scheid yield for a question?
Senator Scheid will yield. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Scheid, in your answer, why don't we use an example? If a senior citizen who is relying on a 401k payment suddenly realized that due to a failure in the economy or due to the failure of Wall Street, they lost 40 or 50% of their face value of their 401k account. Let's say a year after they made a policy for life insurance, and then someone came to them, a stranger, per the definition in your bill, a stranger came and said, "We can bail you out a little bit. We'll give you a cash settlement on that life insurance that you just bought a year ago." We've had examples of that in testimony. Would that in and of itself be a violation of your bill if it became law? There is a stranger involved. It was not a scheme that was agreed upon by the insured with the other party at the time they went into the policy, but the circumstances of that particular person's life just a year later suddenly changed, and they need some ready cash, and this is an opportunity for them to sustain not the lifestyle that they dreamt of when they were looking toward retirement,
but at least it gets them across the monthly payments every month. Tell me how that would fit into this bill if becoming law.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Limmer, thank you for the question. Section 5 of the bill, which appears on page 7 of the second engrossment, line 6 on page 7, talks about presumption of STOLE practices and legitimate insurance transactions. There's a stranger originated, and originated is an important word here, life insurance practice. If that insured underwent a life expectancy evaluation within 18 months before the policy was issued, and they had an agreement before the policy was issued, agreement for the life settlement, or that it was being financed by someone other than themselves. So all of that has to take place before the issuance of the policy. If none of that took place before the issuance of the life insurance policy, they would not fall into the presumption that there was a STOLE. So they would be fine. And people will do that. And those things will happen. And people's needs will change. A spouse who's the beneficiary may die. There may be a divorce, whatever. Those things change. But if at the very beginning, and I think there's an amendment coming from Senator Ortman that will deal with something that we discussed in the Judiciary Committee and may further clarify this for you.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. I do think that we came a long way in the Judiciary Committee through the Senator Scheid's amendments to improve this language regarding the presumption. Folks who are engaging in regular insurance policy, securing an insurance policy should have no difficulty doing that even if we pass this bill. Because most people who buy a life insurance policy pay for their own premiums. And what's unusual here is, and what we're trying to indicate to Minnesotans here, is that if you're going to the process of getting that life expectancy, that's one element that might be unusual, but it's extremely unusual if somebody else is paying the premiums. And for us, that indicates that there's somebody else who's going to benefit from this, and that maybe the person who's buying the insurance policy might be at risk. And I think that those were really important improvements that we addressed in the committee, but there's one more I'm hoping that Senator Scheid will support. And with that, Mr. President, I would offer the A50 Amendment, A50.
Secretary will report the Ortman A50 Amendment.
Senator Ortman moves to amend Senate File 166 as follows. Page 7, delete Subdivision 2. This is Amendment A50.
Senator Ortman on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. This amendment is offered to clarify the purpose here of the bill and what we're trying to accomplish. Because the presumption of a STOLE, we're going to presume someone has engaged in a stranger-initiated life insurance policy if they're not paying for the premiums, if a life expectancy evaluation was done and floated out into the marketplace, it looks like it was done for the purpose of securing that rather than just securing life insurance. But there's a provision that remains in the bill that should be deleted, and that's Subdivision 2 of Section 5. And that's a provision that just complicates our purpose. Subdivision 2 talks about where the presumption might not be applicable, and it sets up safe harbors for people that we don't want to face the harm of having engaged in a STOLE, meaning there shouldn't be a question. I know this is very complex and cumbersome, Mr. President, but I think if we take out the exceptions to the presumption, then I think that we can clear this up for Minnesotans and for our courts, more importantly, so there are not a lot of vague and mixed messages about what we're trying to do here. And I hope Senator Scheid will support this amendment.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I have told Senator Ortman that I don't have serious objections to this amendment, and I don't, because I think she asked the question in the Judiciary Committee, well, why would STOLE be okay at all? And so I think it tightens it up a bit, and members can make up their own mind, but I intend to support her amendment.
Any further discussion on the Ortman Amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Ortman Amendment signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Further discussion on Senate File 166 as amended. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Scheid, now that the amendment, Ortman Amendment, is now included in the bill, the question and the focus I'd like to bring you to, and I'm trying to determine what effect the Ortman Amendment had on your bill regarding the criminal charges, the presumption of guilt discussion that we had. As you know, there's a provision for civil sanction or criminal sanction in the event someone is found guilty of conducting this type of activity illegally. However, the presumption, if I can remember right, if the actor in this participated in those elements that would cause a criminal sanction to be charged, would that person have to prove their innocence? Or let me back up. What I'm trying to determine is during the Judiciary Committee, we had a discussion of whether or not the charges of a criminal crime would be that the person would be presumed guilty unless they could prove themselves innocent based on the triggers that would bring that charge against him. Has the Ortman Amendment erased that now out of this bill?
Senator Scheid?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, what the Ortman Amendment did was to take out the exceptions to the STOLE. So, if I'm not mistaken, I better look at it again. But no, on page 7, deleting subdivision 2, that's where the presumption was inapplicable, actually, I think it's pronounced, under certain circumstances, and that had to do with that list that we discussed in the committee. So it doesn't have anything to do. You know, members, I think it's real important to remember that the insurance company is going to pay. It's a matter of whether or not they're going to pay the investors, or are they going to pay the person's family, because it would be the person's family who would have the opportunity to say, look, this was the intention. My parents never told us about this. We didn't know they were doing this, taking out this policy for the purpose of selling it. And so they would have to, the insurance company is still going to have to pay. So this is not a matter of the insurance company trying to avoid payment.
Senator Ortman, did you? Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I can also address Senator Limmer's question about the amendment that was just passed. It deals only with the exceptions to the presumption. So originally the bill set up safe harbors to protect people that might have innocently gotten involved in a STOLE transaction. And now taking that out, what we're saying is if it meets this newer high standard requiring the expectancy evaluation plus payment from some other resource, if it meets that higher standard, then we know it's a STOLE. We don't have to create safe harbors. And then the remedy, if you will, is a civil law remedy. It's not a criminal law remedy. It would be to deal with fraud, because somebody that's engaged in one of these insurance policies, a STOLE, a stranger originated life insurance policy, was engaging in fraud. And when that occurs then, and we can identify the fraud, then we should be stopping the payments that are going to be made by the insurance company when there's fraud that has intervened in the transaction. And so I think that is still in place. I don't know why we would change that. And I think what we're doing, members, is addressing a need here in Minnesota to clearly outlaw clarify that a STOLE is a fraudulent transaction. We want our courts to understand that, and we want them to set aside these transactions as they would any other fraud transaction in the state of Minnesota.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Scheid renews her motion that when this committee do arise, it's Senate File 166 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. We got, without objection, introduction and first reading. Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee do now rise and report.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator.
Mr. President, I move that the report of the committee of the whole as kept by the secretary be now adopted.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. And now, without objection, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's agenda. First reading of Senate bills. The last order of business this morning will be announcements of Senate interest. Senator. Without objection,
good
Senator
job,
Pretner Solon and M. Olson will be excused from today's session. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, if there's no announcements, I move the Senate adjourn till Thursday, February 26th, 11 a.m.
On the motion to adjourn. Till Thursday, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Senate stands adjourned.